One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Hello and welcome to Dear John and Sarah.
Or as I like to call it, Dear Sarah and John.
You know what I loved about that, Sarah? Mm-hmm. With the passion you brought to it. Holy crap, I almost fell off my chair.
Well, I can't pretend as if I haven't said that before. You're bringing a lot.
106.7 Orlando FM radio DJ energy.
And I think it's overwhelming me. So I like turned it down to balance you out.
What was
like
that?
Couples do, you know?
What was that NPR cooking show?
Delicious Dish.
Sarah's bringing Delicious Dish.
Yes. This is Dear Sarah and John after dark, after dinner.
That's right. We just had dinner. Now we're having a glass of wine. It's an advice podcast where we offer you dubious advice and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
I can promise you neither dubious advice nor news from Mars. I offer only sincere advice.
Yeah.
And no news from Mars.
Okay, great. So far, we're off to a roaring start. It's actually not clear to me what Hank's doing this week. I'm the one with the busy week, but for some reason, he can't make the podcast. So we're here. It's Sunday night. It's a lovely evening in Indianapolis. There's still a bit of snow on the ground. Sarah.
Yes.
Before we get started.
Mm-hmm.
We don't usually have special guests on when they have promo to promo, but you actually do have some promo to promo.
I do.
Which is that you have a new course about art appreciation from Bright Trip.
That's true.
And it's great.
I don't know if you guys know about Bright Trip, but it's an amazing organization that offers courses on a variety of subject matter, including like travel photography, how to visit Japan and not feel like an idiot. And I have made a course with them about how to appreciate art. And yep. We filmed it earlier this year in Washington, D.C. And I've been working on it. And I think it's really cool. And I'm going to be excited to share it.
Yeah. So check out Bright Trip, the art appreciation course from Sarah Urist Green. All right, I think that's all the promo. Usually when Hank is here, I have to do so much promo because he's like, what about the socks? What about the coffee? Oh, we do have...
Socks and coffee.
We do have a light roast coffee now, by the way. AwesomeCoffeeClub.com. We got a sweet light roast if you're interested. All the profits go to charity. All right, let's get on to the podcast portion of the podcast.
Let's do it.
Let's start with this question from Coco, which is the name of one of our closest friends' kids.
Yes.
So I don't know if this question is from Coco, but it seems like it could be. Coco?
Let's hear it.
The question is, Dear John and Sarah, a friend of mine pronounces his name one way while his mother pronounces it differently. Who is right? My name is not Cow-Cow, Coco. Now that makes me think it is our Coco.
All right. I think the answer to this is both are right.
Oh, I think the answer is that the friend
mother,
is right.
The mother, but
No, the friend.
Why?
Well, okay, let me offer you a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Let's say Henry walks upstairs right now. He's 12 years old.
Yes.
Walks in this room and says, "Mom, Dad, moving forward, my name is pronounced Henri."
Oui. Why?
What would you say? Like, I feel like we would have to listen to him. It's his life. It's his name.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So you're concluding that the friend knows the individual's desire.
I'm saying if the individual pronounces his own name one way, that is definitionally
the
correct pronunciation.
Choice. Okay.
And
yeah.
The
fact that the mom wanted
a different pronunciation, like, I'm sorry you imagined a different infant.
Well, let's look at it more generously, John.
Okay.
What if it's a name that's specific to, or more specific to a region or a culture, and there's maybe, say, an Americanized version of it?
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
Then
they're both correct.
You're right. I was trying to get to a firm answer, and life is always a little more complicated than I give it credit for.
I love the gray. I do.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Sarah,
I just want to stay in the gray.
You want to stay in the gray. Not just in terms of the way you look at the world, as every dichotomy is in fact a spectrum that we haven't yet given credit for, but also literally you wear gray every day.
I think that might be an exaggeration. I do happen to be wearing gray right now, but so do you.
I am.
You're wearing two shades of gray.
Listen, we've been together for 20 years, okay?
Yeah. So,
and also, you bought these pants.
That's true.
You are
and your and
actually,
your jacket.
Think of it. You bought both of the gray things that I'm wearing. So hush it up.
Okay. I like gray.
I know.
Literally and metaphorically.
So you know what, Coco? We're going to live in the gray and say everyone is potentially right. It's a case-by-case basis. I'm just saying if Henry comes up here and says his name is now Henri, I'm going to be excited.
I think you've got to ask the friend what they prefer and go with that.
Well, but the friend pronounces the name one way.
Right.
So
you go with the friend. You stick with your friend.
You stick with your friend while maybe also acknowledging that the mother has a perspective that's worth listening to.
There we go. Sincerity.
Okay, this is going to be a super sincere, this next question.
Do you want me to work on being less sincere?
No,
less
I like your earnestness. Okay. I think it's good. It has reflected well on, it is something about you that I have internalized a little bit on my journey toward becoming more earnest.
Okay.
And I think that's been great for me.
Okay.
I used to be a snarky little snooker.
Snarky snooker.
What were those cartoon animals called who lived under the sea in the 1980s? They weren't the...
Because I was thinking of the octonauts.
They weren't
the
shirt tails. No, in the old days, they had the snorkel.
Oh, I did not watch
that. The snoods.
The snoods?
I was a snarky little snood.
Okay.
But I was a snarky little octonaut, but I've gotten over it.
Okay, let's move on.
This next question comes from Joelle, who writes, "You might have seen on TikTok that guy who built a sarcophagus for a bag of Flaming Hot Cheetos with the ingredients of Flaming Hot Cheetos inscribed on the sarcophagus. The intent is for them to be discovered in 100,000 years. It's the latest thing I saw that again confirms that humanity is pretty incredible. If you could, what would you put in a sarcophagus for posterity and why? Memento mori, Joelle."
If you haven't seen this TikTok.
Oh, it's so good.
You have to find it and watch it. You can just Google it if you're not on TikTok.
What makes it extraordinary, which is the case, I've started to realize this is how I feel about all art.
Mm-hmm.
What makes art really good for me is the quality of bit commitment.
Yes.
It's the little details. It's how hard you worked on the ridiculously kind of unimportant parts that often shines through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this sarcophagus was made with tremendous competence and love and commitment
care. They went all the way.
They went all the way making a coffin that contains within it
It's cast in resin, a bag of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Cast in resin.
And then suspended within this cement sarcophagus that has been, he's attempted to rid it of all bacteria.
Right, right. So that it doesn't get ruined. And he also has
suspended it so that it can survive an earthquake.
Even if there's like a magnitude 12 mm-hmm. earthquake, this sarcophagus will survive. It raises the lovely possibility that in the distant future, mm-hmm. whatever comes after us will only find one certain relic of us.
Right.
And that this bag of flaming hot. So here's my beautiful idea.
Okay.
Imagine a distant future.
Okay.
We uncover this sarcophagus of flaming hot Cheeto. Mm-hmm. Now, initially, people will be just like, wow, God, I guess they were really into flaming hot Cheetos.
Right. Did they worship this bag of Cheetos?
This was their god.
Yeah.
But then I think eventually they would be like, no, you know, we have flaming hot Cheetos from other languages in other places.
Okay.
And my hope, my dearest dream would be that this flaming hot Cheetos becomes a Rosetta Stone. That we have, like, it's the way that people of the future learn about English.
I see.
Maybe there's only the Cyrillic alphabet in the distant future, and they use the Cyrillic ingredients of Flaming Hot Cheetos to understand what the Latin alphabet meant sound-wise.
So are you imagining a series of these sarcophagi in different languages all over the world?
No, although I think that's a beautiful idea.
Uh-huh.
What I'm imagining is that the rest of Earth is fairly well preserved and North America is an absolute wasteland.
Okay. But I don't think you're answering the question.
What would you put in a sarcophagus for posterity? The other version of this is like the, you know, like when Carl Sagan and a bunch of other people got together to decide mm-hmm. what was going to be.
Right. On the golden disc.
On the golden disc that we were going to send into space.
Is that what it was called?
Maybe aliens would find it. Disc. That seems right. The golden record.
The golden record. It was something like that. But it was very cool. And they put like earth sounds.
Yeah.
Singing different languages. It's very beautiful.
Yeah. And they also put like images of humans.
The golden record.
Yeah. It is a lovely thing.
It's very lovely. You should listen to it if you haven't.
And I think it's great in general to think about this stuff because it helps us to understand what's important. It helps us to try to look at ourselves from the outside.
Mm-hmm. You know what I would do? Mm. Just thinking about it now. You know, I may have a different answer if I was, say, given more time. Mm. But I would have an artist create some sort of landscape in it. And like that's a recreation to show what our cultures, what our like community look like, or even just our natural world, because who knows what it'll look like. But I definitely would want an artist involved. Who, like, whether it was like rendered in like delicately cut paper or, you know, or maybe it includes lots of different like materials and minerals and like something that would show sort of expertise and care and
mm-hmm.
beauty.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah.
My answer is The Fault in Our Stars. It's a novel.
Okay.
And I'd like it to be the only novel that people in the future know about, because if it's the only novel, if they don't know about Hamlet or Macbeth or Toni Morrison or Jane Austen, and it's the only novel,
they'll think it's like the Bible.
They're going to be like, this is incredible.
Wait, but if you were going to pick any of your books, you would pick The Fault in Our Stars? Because if you did the Anthropocene Reviewed and they were able to understand English, then they could learn so much more about our world.
Well, it's good to know what you think is my best book.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's your best. I'm saying I would choose the Anthropocene Reviewed because I feel like it contains more information about our culture.
Maybe, but I feel like it wouldn't work as the only nonfiction book.
Mm-hmm.
Or does it think The Fault in Our Stars would work as the only novel?
Work of fiction?
Yeah. And people would be like, oh, wow, this guy made up the only story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wouldn't actually do that, of course. That would be terrible. I would put Beloved in there or The Great Gatsby or something.
I would go back to Cheetos in another language.
Cheetos in another language, yeah. It is. Yeah, I'd go for Cheetos in Danish, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
When we were in London, I don't know if you saw it, but when we were at the Science Museum, there was this exhibit that was the first ever known effort at data visualization. It was from like over 100 years ago. And it was a piece of poster board that basically correlated the average salary to child mortality.
Oh, interesting. I did not see this.
One of the things that I would put in the sarcophagus would be a graph explaining that beginning in 1990, humans worked together to reduce the risk of mortality among our most vulnerable members, young children, by over 50% in 30 years.
Yeah.
And then because I think that's the thing I'm proudest of.
Are you trying to make up for saying that you wanted it to be your book?
Oh, no. Just to be clear, this graph would be inside the Fault in Our Stars. It would be right in the middle of it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how you keep it flat, Sarah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could go in together, and then my book, You Are an Artist, could be in there, too.
Yes. I love the idea of calling the Flamin' Hot Cheetos guy and saying, hey, we'd like to commission you
to create a very self-serving, unfunny, uninteresting sarcophagus, which only serves our own narrow interests. Can you do that?
Are you available for that kind of work, or are you more looking to make Flamin' Hot Cheetos content?
Yeah.
That same person, by the way, I'm interested in this person because I feel like their work is really the first place where I've seen full meme culture start to infect the art world. Mm-hmm. Like, that work seemed to me like proper contemporary art that is also a meme. Mm-hmm. It's also a joke. Mm-hmm. And I think that will happen more.
Well, there's also a history in art of sort of performance or action, like incorporating the process into the art. And then, you know, maybe in the gallery, you don't have the sarcophagus, but you have a record of it happening, you have some sort of visualization, like the TikTok that's in the gallery that shows you what happened, like the creation of Spiral Jetty Robert Smithson.
Right. But Spiral Jetty seems to me fundamentally less absurd than...
Yeah.
So I'm interested in the sort of revival of absurdism that, you know, going back to Dadaist ideas about art and how art will be elevated, that we sort of return to that. And we can sort of see, I feel like through the Flamin' Hot Cheetos sarcophagus, we can sort of see how thrilling and new and exciting Duchamp must have been to his time.
You know what I want to know? I want to know what everyone else who's listening to this would put in their sarcophagus.
Well, that's going to be a lot of emails, Sarah. I'm going to need you to check the email for the next few days.
No promises.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to another question. This one comes from Daphne, who writes, I am 15 years old, and every now and again, I feel like I'm a bad person. Hmm. Sometimes the things people say get on my nerves, and I feel like I have no right to be annoyed about it. How can I tell if I'm a bad person or if I'm just a teenager who hasn't yet mellowed out? How can I ensure that I grow up to be a kind person and a positive presence? Dubious advice appreciated. Daphne.
Oh, Daphne. Getting annoyed at other people never goes away.
No, you're not going to mellow out of that one.
No, you learn to, hopefully you learn to let it bother you less. You know, don't let the bastards get you down.
Yeah.
You know?
There's definitely an element of that, but I also think that it's normal to be annoyed by people. And it's also, I think maybe as you get older, the thing that you hope to be able to do is to say, oh, I find that really annoying. And I'm sure there are things that other people find annoying about me.
You mean say it to yourself.
Say it to yourself, totally. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Sarah. Thank you.
Hello, person. I find your behavior
exceptionally annoying. And it's not your fault. It's just like the tone of your voice is unbearable to me. When you laugh, I can't stand it. No, don't say that, Daphne.
No, say it to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay to think it to yourself.
Or maybe even think like, I wonder why it is that this person, saying again to yourself only, I wonder why this person is bothering me so much.
Yeah.
And then maybe it will say something to you like, oh, I need to cultivate new friendships.
Maybe that.
Or maybe I'm in a bad mood.
Or maybe everyone is a little bit annoying and many people we can love anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my religion professor, Don Rogan, who was a great mentor to me, told me once, and it took me years to realize that he was talking about me directly.
Uh-huh.
He told me once, you know, the things that annoy you about other people are the things that annoy other people about you. And I found that very helpful.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Really?
I don't. So I think there can be more than one reason.
You don't find it annoying when people are like a little pretentious?
I'm going to try not to be, I'm trying not to be annoyed by you right now. No, I mean, I think that's one way that one can feel annoyance is recognizing something that right. bothers you about yourself. But do I think that's the only way to be annoyed? No.
Yeah. No, Professor Rogan was great at pithy quotes that don't always hold up to careful scrutiny. A little bit like Fitzgerald, the king
right,
of that.
Right.
There are no second acts in American lives. What a great line. If only it were true.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think, you know, your family tends to annoy you.
Right.
And that's because they know you well and often know exactly how to needle you.
I think that's part of it. I also think it's when you're with anyone all the time.
Right.
There are going to be things that annoy you.
Right.
The challenge and opportunity is to love people anyway and
right.
to find ways through it. So I don't think you're a bad person.
You're not a bad person, Daphne.
Well,
or feeling annoyance doesn't make you a bad person.
I also think that worrying that you might be a bad person is perhaps a good sign.
That you're being thoughtful, that you're considering others, you're like trying to be a good person.
But to Sarah's earlier point about living in the gray, I think the vast majority of us are not dichotomously good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all contain the capacity for terrible cruelty, and we all contain the capacity for compassion and care. And at times we will feed different parts of those selves and we will get different results when we do.
Right.
All right, Sarah, this is a huge question.
Okay.
And I saved it for right before the sponsors.
Uh-oh.
so that we're not joking.
Okay.
It's not a funny question.
All right.
It's a question from Mason. Dear Sarah and John, have you purchased your plots in Crown Hill Cemetery?
Oh, Jesus.
I remember my grandparents gave them to each other one year as gifts. They took my sister and me to see them before they were in use, and I must admit it was a strange day. Happy estate planning, Mason.
We have not.
We got a cold call email.
A long time ago.
8 or 9 years ago from Crown Hill Cemetery, from like a very nice salesperson there who mm-hmm. was like, are you interested in this spot on the hill because it's available? And I was like, that seems like a lot of money to pay for a spot on a hill.
Right.
For my corpse.
Right. I mean, I guess I could say it just hasn't been a priority for us. We haven't had any major health scares or anything like that.
I feel like we'll work it out. It's the great thing about burial is that you can work it out afterwards. You know, like, so...
Yeah.
We both know the broad outlines of what the other wants. We both have living wills.
Mm-hmm.
We both have all that stuff. We haven't like purchased plots because I mean, are we really ready with potentially 70 or 80 years left to live in your case, in my case, somewhat less? Are we really ready
yeah.
to commit to Indianapolis for eternity.
Well, we won't experience being there. You know, I don't know. I don't know what
What do you think happens down there? Haven't you seen our town?
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that it was my wish to not die here.
Oh yeah, I remember.
But Sarah, I've had a big turnabout.
Yeah, Sarah was like, it's the way I feel about Florida.
Right.
I'm sure I've told this story on the podcast before, but one time Hank and I were in Orlando and I had a serious health scare. I had to go to the hospital and Hank came, like, he like rushed to the ER mm-hmm. and was like taking care of me and just hanging out with me and chatting and everything. And the doctor came in and was like, we got to keep you overnight. And I was like, listen, doctor, if there is a 1% chance I am going to die,
I
need you to get me in an ambulance and drive me to Georgia because I am not dying in Orlando.
Well, if you know, never say never kind of thing.
Just know if I do die in Orlando,
it wasn't your wishes.
please play the following audio. John Green desperately regrets becoming deceased in Orlando, Florida, his hometown.
There you go. It's official.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know because, like, I've studied a lot of, like, the lives of artists, and people have second and third acts, artists, non-artists alike. And, you know, like, Georgia O'Keeffe found herself and her artistic voice later in life, living in New Mexico. And, you know, if she had chosen at an earlier time in life, she would have chosen differently. So, you know, I think personally, I'd rather allow for natural evolution and not sort of make that decision now.
I'll tell you what, I would make the decision now if Crown Hill agreed to my stated wishes of having
John.
500 tons of soil piled atop the body of James Whitcomb Riley at the top of the hill, and then I would be buried directly above him.
Oh, God. Poor James Whitcomb Riley.
I'm sure he was a nice man.
Yeah. John doesn't really mean that. It's funny.
He's about to
he
be.
He thinks it's funny. So if
first this, off, it is funny.
The author of Little Orphan Annie.
You want to
overshadow anyone who comes to.
I don't want to overshadow him, Sarah. I want to literally be buried on top of him.
Okay. All right. I think we've answered this question.
By the way, I recently, at your request, wrote out some stuff about if I died.
Yeah.
And
this is not for any specific reason.
Oh, yeah,
it's mostly because I've worked with artists and artists' estates. It's always amazing when an artist has clearly written out what their hopes and wishes are for their work after they're gone.
Yeah.
It's super helpful to those who are put in charge of managing their property and creative life. So.
Yeah, and that's why I said in the document that I want copies of The Fault in Our Stars to be buried in 1,000 sarcophagi around the earth.
No, you did not.
No, but one of the things I said was...
That I would like... use scissors to like cut out or like before anyone else read it,
yeah, just
I would
light like out.
Alter it and be like, no, that never happened.
No, but what I did say was, please know that the James Whitcomb Riley bit is a joke.
Yeah.
And I would not like to be buried on the
hill.
Go. Bury me at the bottom in the valley with the people. Okay. The people, of course, being four vice presidents.
Right.
And U.S. President Benjamin Harrison. Sarah, all of this reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by Crown Hill Cemetery. Crown Hill Cemetery, legitimately the best account on Twitter, which I realize is not saying much, but wow. I mean, they're keeping me on Twitter. Just their account
really
is keeping me on Twitter. It's
really
incredible. They have a new dead person every single day, and they know so much about their lives.
That's great. Yeah, this podcast is brought to you by Crown Hill Cemetery. Their slogan is like us on Facebook.
for 15 years.
Their sign had one of those like replaceable text.
Like a Wendy's,
yeah. You know,
where you put up the text every
two
week.
Two for one,
yeah.
Burgers Sundays. Or whatever. Yeah. Frosties for going great, with Wendy's.
Really good specific yeah. Wendy's reference.
And then, but it, theirs said, like us on Facebook. And I passed it every day on my way to work. And it was just, there's something so beautiful from the years of 2007 yeah. to like, 2 years ago? Maybe?
To the pandemic. There was something so beautiful.
About this cemetery having on its sign, Crown Just Hill Cemetery, like us on Facebook.
Unfortunately.
It is a beautiful place to go.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, I talk about it all the time. It's one of my favorite places in Indianapolis. Unfortunately, somebody just got in a car accident and hit that sign.
Yeah, they got to get a new one.
And so they got to get a new one.
Today's podcast is additionally sponsored by Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Flaming Hot Cheetos, the only relic of humanity's folly. And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by Daphne.
Daphne, who is a good person.
We also have a Project for Awesome message to read from Nell to Clara, not Clara. I hope I did that right, Clara. As we approach 10 years of friendship, I want to say how deeply grateful I am to have you in my life. Whatever you're going through, wherever either of us ends up, I always want to hear from you. Our connection is deeply important to me, and I am so honored to have a best friend like you. Thank you for being here with me. I love you. Not a part of a message, but thank you, Hank and John. I've been a Nerdfighter for 11 years now, and it's such a wonderful part of my life. Lots of love to you both as well.
Aww.
Nell, thank you for that lovely message to Clara.
Lucky Clara.
Lucky Clara.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Thrive Market. T-H-R-I-V-E is how that's spelled. You may or may not be like me. Here's a thing I know about myself. If I put it in my house, I'm going to eat it fast. In no time flat. And so I like to shop in a way that makes sure that the kinds of foods that are in my home are the kinds of food that should be in my body. You know what helps out with that is having a go-to grocery and household essentials thing that I can that just like pops up on my phone and it's like, hey, do you want to order your monthly thing? And I'm like, yeah. And then I pick the things that I want in my house and I don't pick the things that I don't want in my house in the moments when I actually have self-control, which is not when I'm standing in front of the pantry. Thrive Market's super great, whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, which I absolutely am. And those the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them that make my wife so happy. She's like, I can finally have peanut butter pretzels again after developing a gluten allergy. It's fantastic. And as a Thrive Market member, you save money on every single grocery order. On average, you can save over 30% each time. They even have a little deals page that changes like every day, and you can go and see it and see like, maybe I want to try out some new fun thing. They got all kinds of brands on their website. They got Amy's, Banza, Burt's Bees. They got Mike's Hot Honey, Oatly Olipop, Poppy, Salt. When you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give. Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/dearhank for 30% off your first order plus a $60 gift. That's Thrive Market, T-H-R-I-V-E market.com/dearhank. And they have told me to say it one final time, even though at this point it seems like a lot. ThriveMarket.com/DearHank. This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. They let them close the thing, let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, That's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
All right, Sarah, we've already answered this question, but okay, we're still going to ask it. It's from JC, who writes, "Dear John and Hank and Sarah, I recently moved to Indianapolis from out of state. I'm trying to explore the city. So far, I've visited the Loom at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, as well as the Uranus Fudge Factory off of I-69. Two ends of one bizarre spectrum. Tell me, what else am I missing? Hoosiers and hayrides, JC." JC, you got to go to Crown Hill Cemetery. It's incredible. You walk all the way up to the top of that hill, and that's where you see James Whitcomb Riley. But if you look up, right now you can see the sky, but not for long, JC. Not for long. Someday you'll see me.
You've got to go to the Museum of Medical History.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a very good
one.
That's
a weird one.
Yeah.
It's small and weird.
And specific.
Yeah.
Off-putting, but in a good way, I think.
A lot of medical devices.
Yeah. Yep. You've got to go for a hike or a trail run at Fort Benjamin Harrison.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the things that I didn't discover till later on.
I love Fort Benjamin Harrison. Eagle Creek State Park is one of the largest urban parks in the world. Now, I know what you're going to think when you go there, JC. This is not an urban park.
That's
true. But Indianapolis is geographically a very large city, and we swallowed Eagle Creek State Park, and it's a great park.
Yeah.
I don't think it's called Eagle Creek State Park. No. I think it's just called Eagle Creek Park. But it's great.
What else? There are good bagels here.
Oh, the bagel fair.
The bagel fair, whose sign out front just reads
bagels.
They're bagels made the right way.
Oh, they're super delicious. Bagels. It's hard to get bagels that good in New York. They're at 86. They're like by the Target at 86th and Westfield. That's honestly, ish. If you go to, I don't know. Listen, JC, I've only lived in Indianapolis for 16 years. I don't know where anything is, okay?
What else? What about...
I like how we're like, hey, what should we do in the city that you've lived in for 16 years? And our answer is go for a walk, eat some bagels, and walk around the cemetery.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
What else? What about...
If you go up to like Fishers, you can go on a one-day trip, a canoe trip on the White River, which Sarah doesn't love just because of the Giardia.
I wouldn't recommend this.
I thought it was really fun.
There's lots of great cycling. Indianapolis is notably flat.
And now's the...
quite a pleasant place to cycle.
JC, have you thought about walking into a cornfield and just eating some feed corn and being like, wow, this is what cows eat? It's not that good. That's a fun thing you can do in Indianapolis that you can't do in a lot of places.
You can go to the Can-Can Cinema and Brasserie.
Oh, yeah, we have an art cinema now, the Can-Can.
That has good food, too.
It does.
You can go to the Idol.
Oh, this is the weirdest, coolest thing about Indianapolis.
In Fountain Square, there's this interesting little garden called the Idol. And it is basically a theater for watching the intersection of two
gigantic
interstates.
And
it is weird and beautiful
and sad.
Very specific. You should do that.
There is nothing anywhere on earth like the Idol. And the person who made it, who's mostly responsible for it, is a true Indianapolis original.
Well, and I thought of it because he also helped start the Can-Can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating guy. You know, you're JC, the important thing is that you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Indianapolis is a great, great city.
And it gets better.
The longer you're here and the more people you meet and the more people you know who can tell you the best bagel places and so forth.
Right. All right. We have another question from Mariah, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I recently bought rollerblades. Now, my friends like to go rollerblading, and I've never gone with them because I don't know how, but I am practicing. And over the next couple of months, I intend to get very good so that when I visit my friends over New Year's, I can join them. Just with your, as with your surprise fiddler dilemma from many years ago, what is the best way to go about surprising my friends with my new rollerblading skills? All I want for Christmas is mad skill. Mariah."
Ooh. I have an idea.
What is it? I have an idea too. You go first. Because my idea is great.
Okay. Well, then I'll go first because I don't know how good my idea is.
Okay.
Okay. It's so
probably the same.
You get good.
Yeah.
You figure out your rollerblading persona. So like you figure out what kind of an outfit you're going to wear.
Do you go like 80s Jane Fonda?
Right. So whatever
neon?
It is it more of a 70s vibe?
Or do you go like hard goth?
Or 90s? You could go hard on the 90s because that's really when it was born,
Outcast, the rollerblading. Punk rock 90s? Or you could go Nirvana 90s? You could go grunge?
Okay. Or you can disregard all of those ideas and find your own rollerblading persona. And then, and like some, like walkout music kind of thing. Like you got to figure along with that. Like what kind of music goes along with your persona.
Once
you figure that out, before you see them, you make a TikTok or a video.
Okay.
That is like showcasing your rollerblading persona and skills. And that way you can sort of control it.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little bit worried since you're still new that you're going to like...
Maybe 2 months isn't enough. I'm worried about that too.
And if you can sort of control the sharing of it...
Right.
...to really highlight your skills...
Yeah.
...it'll put less pressure on the in-person reveal.
Right. I like that. What I really like about it though is the really leaning in to your rollerblading persona, giving as much time to developing who is rollerblade Mariah,
right,
as opposed to just who is Mariah,
right,
as you give to the rollerblading itself.
That's
so for every hour you spend learning rollerblading, you also need to spend 1 hour learning who rollerblade Mariah is.
That's right. And so what's the reveal?
The only thing I know about rollerblade Mariah, because I'm obviously not Mariah.
Yeah.
But I do know one thing about rollerblade Mariah,
yeah,
which is that rollerblade Mariah does not listen to music via AirPods or via headphones. Rollerblade Mariah listens to music via it coming out.
Oh, I was going to go boombox.
Right. Some form of boombox. It comes out loud.
You just gestured around your midsection.
Well, this is where I was picturing the boombox. I was picturing Sarah? I was picturing a fanny pack that contains within it a mini boombox. And so it feels like the music is emanating from your fanny pack.
A speaker?
a speaker, if you will. A mini boombox. A sort of, what if you shrunk a boombox down to being a single speaker?
A Bluetooth speaker?
If you will. Okay? Imagine a technology that turned a boombox that made it progressively smaller.
Yes.
And there wasn't a radio, but via some kind of magic, it was connected to your phone, which via some kind of magic wasn't connected to a wall.
Okay,
that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
Rollerblade Mariah definitely listens to
music.
Does
it require 17D batteries?
It does. It absolutely does. Rollerblade Mariah only listens to music that everyone around Rollerblade Mariah also has to listen to.
The party goes
where Mariah goes.
Yeah.
And that's all I know for sure.
Okay.
I think that it might
but
be better.
But you think the friend reveal should all be... not recorded, just like...
Here's what I love about an in-person reveal.
Yeah.
Imagine Rollerblade Mariah rolls up and looks really nervous and uncertain, except for the fact that Rollerblade Mariah looks more like a professional rollerblader in 1997 than any person has ever looked. But like on the actual rollerblades, it's like super uncomfortable and like seems to be almost falling over and it's like all shivery and shaky. And then the music kicks in and it's a fake out.
I see.
And suddenly Rollerblade Mariah's going like one leg out in the air with a karate kick. And Rollerblade Mariah's going backwards and doing some like dance moves while rollerblading.
It's like a pool shark.
Like a pool shark. Like Paul Newman in that movie.
Who loses the first game.
Yes.
And then turns it around.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. So you, Mariah, you come out, you stumble, maybe you fall. You're wearing all of your pads.
You're definitely wearing
your knee
all of your,
pads.
You have so many
You've got the wrist guards.
Oh, you definitely have the wrist guards.
You've got the helmet. You've got it all. And you're wobbly. You fall.
Yeah.
And then you've got somebody helping you who turns on your special music that you have choreographed. A series of moves to.
And it's like Eye of the Tiger or something.
Yes.
And you just shoot off down the rollerblading runway.
Yes. So you've got two options here.
They're both really good.
Control freak over here would pre-record. John would just go live.
Yeah. There's the difference between wanting to control everything and just having a deep, deep belief in yourself.
Yes.
Unwarranted, especially.
Good luck.
Oh, Mariah,
this is exciting.
We're so excited for you. All right, Sarah, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I want to let you in on an email that we received from an 11-year-old named Mina, possibly Mina. I'm not very good at that stuff.
Probably Mina.
Who writes, "Dear John and Hank, my name is Mina. I'm 11 years old. My mom listens to your podcast, and yesterday, while out on a walk, I heard it for the first time. And in the episode, a question was asked about where one could go that would be the furthest away from any venomous creature, and you said Iceland. I would like to propose an alternative English-speaking country, Ireland, where I live. Legend has it that St. Patrick got rid of all the snakes in Ireland, and we do not have scorpions or tarantulas. We do have a false widow spider, but their bite is like a bee sting. It's not a big deal. We don't have mosquitoes, but we do have midges, usually found around lakes. Their bite is a bit itchy, but nothing like a mosquito bite. I think that my country would be a great alternative to Iceland. I hope you agree. Pumpkins and penguins, Mina." Mina, I agree. And I wanted to read this to Sarah.
Yeah.
Because I think Sarah also agrees.
Well, and unlike you, I have been to Ireland.
I have been to Ireland,
you
Mina.
Have?
Yes.
When?
I performed in Dublin with my brother in 2012.
We haven't been together.
We've never been together.
And you haven't really explored Ireland.
I don't need to explore Ireland to know that they speak English. It's where my ancestors are from, and it's in the European Union.
That's all you need?
Yeah, Sarah.
The bar is pretty low.
I'm sorry. Here are a few other facts about Ireland.
Yeah.
They have universal access. This is going to blow your mind to healthcare.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who you are. You can walk into a doctor's office and receive healthcare.
I like Ireland.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the geographical cure.
I don't believe in the geographical cure either. But what I will say, Mina.
Unless you're like fleeing oppression.
Is that my great grandparents left Ireland for America. In search of a better life.
Yeah.
I would honor them.
I take
by
it back.
Leaving America for Ireland in search of a better life.
John, I have to amend my previous statement.
Okay.
I don't believe in the geographical cure to like specific personal problems.
Right. Like you're not gonna
like you're
fix,
unhappy, yeah. I need to move to California to start fresh or whatever.
Because
wherever you go, you are.
I can't stop eating Flaming Hot Cheetos, so I'll move to Colorado.
And I'll never
you're gonna
find them.
You're gonna still find Flaming Hot Cheetos.
But if there are very good reasons to move, and a lot of people have to move, and a lot of those are very legitimate geographical cures.
Totally.
Yeah.
The point is, Mina, we agree with you strongly.
Ireland's beautiful and great.
Now, I know you're only 11,
yes,
Mina, and I don't want to put too much pressure on you, but if you could get us a passport, we
haven't applied.
We'd be open to it, Mina. That's all I'm saying. If you can get us a passport, we've got an open mind.
Yeah.
I think it was my great-great-grandparents that came over from Ireland, because I'm like one generation too far to get an Irish passport that way.
Yeah.
But
couldn't you apply and get some like author's passport?
I don't know.
Something?
That seems like a Mina problem more than a John problem. Mm-hmm. I feel like Mina's on it now.
Yeah.
Mina's going to get to work.
Great. Thanks, Mina.
Thank you. All right, Sarah, you already know the news from AFC Wimbledon because you can't escape it living in this house. But
it's true.
Here's a fact you may not know.
Mm-hmm.
AFC Wimbledon on Tuesday, they beat the top team in League Two, Leighton Orient. Top of the table.
They've really been doing so much better since we went to a match.
So much better since we went to a match.
Yeah.
In fact, they have now not lost a game in 7 games.
Wow.
Do you know what all 7 of those games had in common?
Tell me.
I did not tweet during any of them. When AFC Wimbledon play and I tweet during the game,
they lose.
They have won 2 games, drawn 4, and lost 6. When AFC Wimbledon play and I do not tweet, they are literally undefeated. This is at the point now where it's not just statistically significant. It's starting to seem like at some point correlation is causation. Like at some point, it's true. Mm-hmm. I was ruining the team by tweeting, and now I have addressed that issue and the team is cohering.
I'm actually really impressed that we got this far into this podcast recording without talking about Twitter. And here we are. It's here. It's happening now.
I mean, if you think it's hard to be married to me in re-Twitter, imagine Catherine's situation.
I know. I feel for her.
AFC Wimbledon, after beating Leighton Orient 2-0, and it was the best performance I have seen from Wimbledon in years. It was unbearable. The Leighton Orient fans were furious. They were like throwing flaming flares onto the pitch. I told you. Onto the pitch. They were so angry. It was incredible. And we...
That's going to be my band name.
Flaming Flares.
The Flaming Flares.
It's a good name. We were absolutely unbearable to play against. We made the second half so boring, so long. Remember when we watched that game against Sutton United? Remember how boring Sutton made that second half after they scored the goal?
Yeah.
It was like that. And Leighton Orient, top of the table, hated every second of it. I loved it. Then we went and played Salford City away over the weekend, and we tied 0-0. And again, we were unbearable to play against. Lots of fouls, lots of breaking up the play, just tough, committed. There's this 20-year-old kid who plays fullback for us, Jack Curry, who's played for Wimbledon since he was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I love watching him play. He just pours his heart out. It's incredible. Right now I am in love again with AFC Wimbledon. I have fallen in love anew. And AFC Wimbledon are now, Sarah, in third place.
Wow.
Among all the teams in the bottom half of the table.
Okay. Okay. All right. That was good.
So we don't have Mars news this week because Hank's not here, but we're going to have a new segment, a Sarah-specific segment called...
What's Happening in the Pottery Studio.
What is happening in the Pottery Studio?
So the most interesting thing that happened in the past week is that John is taking pottery with me right now.
Yeah.
And I messed up what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of squidged it because like the fun of like... throwing pottery on the wheel is that like you mess up and it's like you go like, ah, and you can kind of like squidge it and, you know, try to rectify the clay to use later. And John was like, stop. That's cool. I like it.
It was so beautiful.
And I was like, all right. So I took the little squidge and then I realized that after I cut it off the wheel, it looked like garlic.
It looked like a garlic clove.
And so then I took it home and let it dry a little bit. And then I carved it into a garlic clove.
Yeah.
And now I'm waiting to get it back from the kiln. And I'm very excited about my little garlic. So I have to thank you, John.
You're welcome. It's very cool. And there's going to be a little hollow space in there.
Yeah.
Which I always love. I loved closed vessels where we have to imagine what the hollow space inside must be like.
There does have to be a hole. I did have to poke a hole.
Don't ruin it for me.
Well, I was informed that it would explode. So it doesn't have to be like a huge hole. So it's just a pinprick on the bottom.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
we'll see. Unless it might have exploded in the kiln.
I might have to fill that in with a little bit of clay just for my own.
That's fine.
Just for my own joy of imagining
okay. What
must be going on within spaces we cannot see.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for potting with me.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
This is fun.
Everybody check out Bright Trip, brighttrip.com.
Brighttrip.com.
Great.
And look up my course, How to Appreciate Art. It's a really great gift for yourself or for somebody in your life. And it's not all the kind of usual stuff about like the golden ratio or like composition or movements or things like that. It's like actually about how to feel comfortable around art and how to talk about art and make the most of your experience, no matter what kind of art you're looking at.
So check that out at brighttrip.com. Thank you to Sarah for co-hosting the podcast. Thanks to Tuna Medish for editing it. Tuna, as always, great job. Sorry that I'm not better at this. Thanks to Rosianna Haas Rojas, our producer. Also to Brooke Shotwell, the Boki Chakravarti, who is our editorial help, although not on this one because there was no science stuff. But still, thank you to Boki. And the music that you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.